Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another edition of Real Science Friday. I am Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
And Fred is the webmaster for the esteemed Creation Research Society. What an honor, Fred, to have you in studio. This is the second part, the conclusion of our program on the evolution of language. Turns out there's no evidence that language evolved.
There's no evidence at all. As we mentioned in last program that a lot of their theories that they've came up with, they admit, are based on pretty much no evidence.
No evidence, and there's actual evidence that some of the ideas and the theories are incorrect. So we're going to continue through Dr. Jerry Bergman's article in the last issue of Creation Research Society Quarterly. But first, a reminder, February is our annual BEL telethon to keep us broadcasting for another year. Please, if you can help, you can call our phone number. You can ask for a catalog. You can make a donation, 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. We're asking people, if you possibly can, please, a gift of $30 will help so much. If you can give $50, then in thanks, we'd like to send you two Bible study albums. You could go online or ask us when you call, and we'll tell you some of the titles. You could pick any two of our Bible study albums. For a $50 gift, you'll save $20. For those who can give $100, you can ask for any four BEL resources, including The Plot, which is my life's work, an overview of the Bible. So please, if you can, please call and help with our telethon, 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. So Fred Williams, where were we as we were discussing the evolution and the origin of human language?
Well, you know, Darwin believed that everything, the animals started, or we, you know, our ancestors started with grunts and hand gestures. And, you know, we know today animals, they use a form of grunts instinctively and hand gestures. But when we compare this to human language, obviously there are huge differences. Human language, for example, is highly contextual. Well, what do we mean by that? Well, things like wise man and wise guy have opposite meanings, right?
Wise man and wise guy.
Yeah, so a wise guy is a smart aleck. A wise man's a guy who's intelligent.
The magi.
Yeah.
An apostle.
And you know, wise guy can actually have two totally different meanings. It could be the smart aleck guy, or it could be a mobster.
Yeah, that's a good point. And overlook and oversee.
Yep, slow down and slow up. Now, I hear that a lot when I'm driving. The only time I didn't hear that is when my wife was pregnant with Ryan the first time. I heard speed up a lot as we were heading to the hospital.
Speed up, but normally slow down or slow up.
That's right.
And we know what one another is saying, whereas animals grunt, and they don't have to be taught grunts. That's instinctual. It's in their genetics. But human language is very different. Babies have to learn. Toddlers learn the vocabulary and the rules of grammar.
That's right. And a critical factor often ignored by, you know, evolutionists is the need for a corresponding brain and nervous system just to understand a language.
To understand a language.
So something to interpret, a
receiver. To speak it and to understand it.
That's right. I mean, if you want to apply it to information theory, you've got a sender and a receiver. And you need intelligence in order for information to exist. So how, right. if there's nothing to interpret it, you know, where did the interpreter of the language, you know, how did that all start? I mean, there's there's a myriad of problems trying to explain this from a naturalistic evolutionary worldview.
Yeah, and language, I think, is symbolic logic. And the laws of physics, they don't have symbolic logic as part of the laws of physics. It doesn't have to do with anything with mass or temperatures, force. So, well, Professor Dixon, he's the chair of linguistics in Australia, Australian National University. And he wrote something fascinating, Fred. He wrote that he learned in school that the Aborigines were the lowest type of man, which is tragic, and this goes along with Darwinism.
Oh, yeah, they had actually they'd used them for experiments. I mean, there's some horrible things they did because they thought that they were close to the animals.
And Darwinists have lately been admitting the racism that went along with Darwinism and eugenics. And in fact, the United Methodist Church, we talked about this, recently admitted it was the fundamentalist Bible churches that were rejecting eugenics, and it was the liberal denominations that were supporting it in this country and in Europe.
That's right.
Evil. Well, anyway, this professor of linguistics, he said in school he had learned that Aborigines were the lowest type of man, scarcely better than animals, with no idea of property or work, and they were contrasted with the Maoris. I think they're from New Zealand. I went to New Zealand to protest Bill Clinton.
Okay.
So I seem to recall that, who were said to be at the top of the black man league, only a jump away from Europeans in their capacity to be civilized. And he said that this Professor Dixon of linguistics in Australia, he said he had long since worked out his own views on these matters, but still it was a surprise to be told that Australian languages had complex grammars that could provide strong intellectual challenge, as strong as any linguistic system known. So he was saying, hey, I was surprised that these Aborigines, even though I had long since realized that Darwin was wrong and they were not animals, they were fully human, still, I was surprised to find out that their language was as sophisticated as any other modern language.
That's right. And he noted that the science journal Oceana had reported that their language, even of the lowest type of man, has many gender classes and extensive grammatical concord.
So that the scientific journal said, whatever language you look at, they're extensive and sophisticated.
Well, what's neat about this one, it had what he mentions here, 44 forms of the verb to be.
Wow.
So how many forms do we have in the English language? I really don't know, but it's not very many. It's not nowhere near 44.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, to be, and I am, you are, he is.
I is.
They is, they was is, they was is, will be is. So we forget how to speak quite often. And by the way, when you're writing, if you can edit your own writing, do a first edit pass and get rid of the verb to be in half or 80% of the instances, you'll have much stronger writing. The writing becomes much more enjoyable to read and powerful because it's just a filler word that we stick in.
To be or not to be.
That you can't get rid of in either. Actually, you could, but you wouldn't want to. Okay. All right. So many of these points are made by evolutionists. Yale linguist Edward Sapir, he spent a lifetime studying language, and he concluded that simple primitive languages do not exist. And this guy's from Yale, that they just don't exist.
There's no evidence of language evolution.
Yeah, that's right. I'm thankful, again, Dr. Jerry Bergman wrote this article in Creation Research Society Quarterly, CRSQ. He also points out that this eminent linguist, Stuart Chase, that he bluntly said that stories about tribes with only grunts and squeals are biological fakes. This is exciting. And he wrote that from earliest times, it seems to be universally agreed, language has remained essentially the same, except for changes in the lexicon. And then Jerry Bergman quotes from another scientist who concluded that we cannot learn anything. Fred, this cracks me up. We cannot learn anything about the evolution of language from observing the speech of primitive societies that are still functioning. Anthropological research has conclusively shown that even the most primitive tribal societies of our time possess highly structured and complex languages with rich vocabularies. Any difference that may exist between the languages of primitive communities, whatever that is, and our highly sophisticated cultures lies in the number of ideas and concepts that require expression rather than in the way in which they are expressed. So he says, any hope of discovering the origin of language from the languages of primitive groups must be abandoned.
Well, you know, to me, this kind of reminds me of how we find in the fossil record, in the bottom layers where everything's supposed to be simple, we find incredibly complex creatures. We find exactly the opposite of what evolutionists said we should find.
Yeah.
We don't find simple to complex. We find complex to
complex.
Complex
from the beginning.
Very much so. The trilobite eye is remarkably complex.
Mm. Yeah, and in fact, we know that during the global flood, you had hundreds, thousands of square kilometers of sediment laid down, sometimes pure because of the sorting effect of the waves, and animals, fossils, sorted themselves out. But the idea that we had primitive life, no, it's not in the fossil record.
That's right. And, you know, the study of changes in language, vocabulary over time, and we mentioned this last program, it's documented that languages have really, if anything, become simpler over time. Mm. The general trend is for the languages to simplify. You know, we are tend to be sometimes lazy and we want to use shorter phrases for something.
Right.
Use, you know, less of our mouth muscles, so to speak.
Instead of thinking what we want to say, like,
exactly.
Imagine anthropologists in 300 years. Let's say they said the word like a lot.
There's a certain Nuggets basketball player that every other sentence is, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? And you know, Bob, you know, creation, you know what I mean? And
Fred, you've taken me to a couple Nuggets games. Denver Nuggets, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
What an honor and good seats, too.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
But, so, you know, what's interesting, Bob, is that there are some Eskimo languages. A single noun can have more than 1,000 different forms, each with its own precise meaning, which was just...
Wait, come on now. How many in Eskimo languages a noun can have a thousand different forms?
For example, the
each
words...
with a different meaning.
That's right. I mean, they have a lot of different words, versions for the word snow. We've only got one that I know of.
Snow.
That's right.
And they have a lot of different words for snow. Many... it is fascinating. One Guatemalan language, any verb can have thousands of different forms, of course, by adding various endings, but thousands of different forms.
Yeah, it's amazing. So they got a lot of different words for snow, but I wonder, do they have a lot of different words for heater?
Heater? Maybe not. Okay.
Or maybe global warming. Maybe they got a lot of different words for that, or maybe not.
I only have one word for that, Al Gore. Al Gore, the Al Gore effect. It's getting colder. So a study of so-called primitive languages, and this is according, again, to an evolutionist linguist, throws no light on language origins since most of them are actually more complicated in grammar than the tongue spoken by so-called civilized peoples. So you go back to Aronoff and Reese Miller in 2001, and Jerry Bergman again did all this research, brilliant scientist himself with a half a dozen degrees in different disciplines. They estimated the earliest language dates back to only 3000 BC. Now, Fred, we're getting closer because the global flood wiped out all the previous record of mankind and their language and achievements, except for that which survived on the ark. So we could assume that, and we know that a lot of knowledge, sophistication survived with Noah and his sons and daughter-in-laws on the ark.
That's right.
But they say it goes back to 3000 BC, and they say that the Sumerian language is a complex, well-developed language. That's southern Iraq, Babylon, and so on. The oldest known language, Akkadian, that's also in Mesopotamia, was spoken by the people who inhabited the plains of Arabia. And so this is where the Bible tells us that civilization started after the flood.
That's right. And from the Tower of?
Babel.
Yeah.
From the Tower of Babel.
Now,
the Babylonian Empire, Ur of the Chaldees, where Abraham was born, the ziggurat and so on, and it's been excavated.
Now, is another word for Babel, Babel?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't,
because I know a lot of people say Tower of Babel, but I'm not sure which is the correct one.
I say Tower of Babel.
Okay.
You say Babel?
I say, actually,
you,
I say Babel, but
you say
a lot of people
say tomato. I say tomato. You know the difference between a tomato and a tomato? 30 cents a pound.
Okay.
That was my grandfather's line. So, yeah, Tower of Babel. I say, but I hear people say Tower of Babel. But Tower of Babel, we say Babel and babbling.
Yeah.
Like
exactly.
Ann Coulter, Laura Ingraham, babbling. Okay.
Okay. So, you know, something else interesting is they're finding that the basic language families are in very many ways drastically different. So also, you know, Darwinists claim that language development in infants imitates language development in human evolution.
Okay, now wait a minute. So you got languages that are so different. The original languages, the old languages, are so radically different, they obviously didn't evolve from one another. Like Eastern languages compared to Semitic languages, they're just so different. Like Turkey, for example, Turkish did not evolve from any other language. And so they're so different. And so what is it? Darwinists say that babies, what? Come on, Fred,
infants,
you're making this up.
Imitate language development. Darwinists claim that language development in infants imitates language development in human evolution. And boy, that reminds, what does that remind you of, Bob?
Ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny.
And what is that?
That is so silly. It's a discredited theory that, of course, evolution textbooks still include from time to time. It's that when the baby's developing in the womb, he goes through a fish stage, an amphibian stage, a reptile, a mammal stage, and so on. And it's just make-believe. And the drawings used to establish it originally were Freud's.
That's right. They were the guy who did that. A German scientist named Haeckel, who, by the way, you can trace the Nazi regime back to his belief system. Mm. He faked these drawings, and they knew it was a fraud in the 1800s when he did it. And this
and it
stuff
still
was
crops
still,
up in
still,
science textbooks.
It still crops up, and people still
maybe
mention
now,
it.
Maybe now it's finally out. I don't know.
Hopefully I'm not sure. I bet you it isn't, because you still hear people talk about gill slits and stuff
and
like
peppered
that.
Peppered moths and on and on.
There's, yeah.
So, okay. So, anyway, so the babies cooing do not recapitulate the origin of language.
That's right.
You don't have to teach a baby to coo. That's genetic. But language with vocabulary and grammatical rules, that's learned, although our brain is wired for language. As human beings, our mind, I should say, we are wired for language.
That's right. And, you know, you brought up an interesting point earlier about how these languages are so different. How do you explain the origin of all these separate different languages? To me, it reminds me of what evolutionists call convergent evolution, when they can't explain how two remarkably similar things could have taken a different evolutionary path. They can't explain it by a common ancestor, so they put a word on it, convergent evolution,
yeah,
to explain it away. For example, the octopus eye,
right,
is remarkably similar to the human eye.
Yeah.
But, you know, evolutionists don't think we're close on the tree.
I think we did. I think that we evolved from an octopus.
Okay.
That's why... You know, no, I guess I don't have any evidence for that. Fred, that Darwin's tree of life was wrong. That's what New Scientist said 2 weeks ago. So Darwin's tree of life was wrong. Over 80% of 500,000 genes studied so far in the animal kingdom and the plant kingdom show evidence of horizontal transfer, not evolution along a tree of life. Imagine New Scientist say evolutionists in large numbers are agreeing Darwin was wrong on one of his two most significant ideas, the tree of life.
That's right. And okay, yet they'll just explain it away.
Yeah. Well, Darwin's theory of language evolution included work down in South America with a native people down there, the Fuegians. And they lived in South America, and he called them savages. Now, Darwin was a racist, as we know, from his writings.
Yeah, from the title of his book.
The title of his book, Survival of the Favored Races.
That's right.
And, I mean, he explicitly was a racist in his writings, in his correspondence with others who rejected God as our creator. And he said that these people in South America, they were primitive beasts and cannibals. So he called them savages, primitive beasts. And he concluded that these savages had an extremely primitive animal-like language. Now, that's from the father of modern evolution, but then introduce a Christian, a missionary, Thomas Bridges, who back in 1886, he lived and worked intimately with the Fuegians for many years, and he concluded that they had a sophisticated language, and while Darwin thought they were grunting like animals, this Christian missionary, Darwin thought they only had about 100 words. Well, it turns out that Thomas Bridges researched their language, and he wrote a dictionary and identified over 32,000 words and inflections.
Wow. And to put this number into perspective, a speaker who knows the basic grammar in 5,000 words in a language is considered to have a basic competence of that language.
So if somebody knows 5,000 Arabic words and they could speak using them, they're considered competent in Arabic. And so these people, Darwin thought they had 100 words, they had 32,000, and they had a sophisticated language, not grunting like animals. And notice how dehumanizing his view is. Oh,
absolutely. He was off by 31,900.
Not bad when you compare their error with the Big Bang and with fossils. Not bad, really. Okay, so the question of how did language get here remains unanswered, and according to one evolutionist, Fred, writing just recently in 2007, Keneally, that it remains the hardest problem in science today. Not only is it unanswered, but language, and when we debate evolution, most people don't think about language. It's one of 1,000 features and issues that evolution cannot even begin to deal with. And this scientist says it remains the hardest problem in science today. And I'd say, yeah, except for everything else.
Yeah, the whole theory of evolution is just a myriad of problems. And this is just
how
one
about
that's
flight?
Another example.
How about flight? How about echolocation, radar? How about the moon? Where did the moon come from? They don't know where the moon came from.
You've got a great one on your website, the eye. How did it evolve? How did that little thing that called?
The trochlea.
What is that?
The muscle on the top of the eye where it just routes through a pulley. How did that evolve?
You got to see that picture. It's cool. It's amazing.
Great at kgov.com. And how about consciousness? How does innate matter become self-aware? I mean, he says, yeah, I agree. Language is an unsolved riddle, and it remains the hardest problem in science today, except for all the other problems when you try to do away with God.
And just to think, Bob, there's what, 7,000, according to this article, there's 7,000 languages that exist today. And I think he mentioned somewhere else that he's expecting that the estimates are that over time there'll be only about half left. I don't know how long a period of time that is, but if languages, a lot of them are going extinct.
Yeah, I think 7,000 known languages through history, including the languages that are extant today and spoken today. So and they are going extinct. That's true. Yeah.
And they can trace them back to about 100 language groups. That's what evolutionists have documented.
Whoa, they go back to 100.
Language groups.
That is pretty cool. And research completed so far indicates that all human language families had their roots in small populations, which is so consistent with the story of the Tower of Babel when God confused the languages. And God caused the people who were alive back then, just a few thousand years before Christ, to separate from one another because suddenly they spoke different languages. They couldn't communicate. Imagine the intensity of that day, Fred, when people who knew one another suddenly completely just spoke natively different languages.
Mind-boggling.
Mind-boggling. And God could do that, and he did it as a temporary judgment of mankind.
That's right, and that's the origin of a lot of the different culture groups we know of today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Bob, but there's a problem with the origin of these languages. Well, there's 7,000 of them.
Another problem?
There's so many problems.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing how, as you listen to these programs, there's only one reasonable, logical explanation. It always points back to
our
the
Creator
Bible,
God,
the Creator,
who
that's
made
right.
us. We love our wife and our kids because God is love. It's not because we have chemicals in us or we ate chocolate.
That's right?
But that's what evolutionists are stuck with. It's just an accident that we can love one another or envy. It's so absurd.
But, it is.
So there's another problem.
There's
Fred.
Another problem. What? I mean, you think about it, with all the enormous diversity existing in our language, yeah. in the human language, it has to be explained by geographic separation.
Oh,
7,000 different languages?
I never even thought about that, because you need a group to be alone together to develop a separate language. And the earth is only so big. I mean, it's big. It's only so big. We have 7,000 languages have evolved. So God made human beings with a propensity for language. We are wired for language. What if there are deaf children who grow up in an orphanage for deaf kids? I've read that they will teach them sign language, but then the deaf kids growing up create their own vocabulary. They extend the sign language. And it's just so awesome how God made us. He wired us for speech, for language.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, yeah. this study by Jerry Bergman, which, again, great article, that he mentions that one study of 1,000 languages found close to 700 uses of the word papa. For dad, you know, for father.
1,000 languages of the 7,000 were studied for their word for father, and 700 had papa, like pops qualifies, right?
Yeah.
Pops, papa, padre, and I bet you even papa and dada are so similar. You know, when you go from one language to another, sometimes consonants are swapped. But papa, dada, daddy, dada, all these names that are used all over the world.
And so here's this flow within this data that can only point to one thing. It's evidence for a single source of that designed.
A single source, even though languages have fundamentally different structures.
It's like God's handwriting, his signature into our language in a sense. Papa, father.
Just like God's fingerprint, his divine authorship is seen in the DNA of the human race and of all species, in fact. Wow. Well, that Chomsky guy we mentioned on the last show, Noam Chomsky, a world-renowned linguist, he concluded from a lifelong study, Fred, on language, that no evolutionary transition exists between noises that animals make and human speech. That's Chomsky.
Yeah, and he you know, if you note that chimpanzees, we're supposed to be closestly...
We're close to chimps?
Yeah, close to chimps.
Yeah.
And yet, are they able to produce speech, Bob?
They're physically unable to produce speech. Our closest,
the answer
supposedly.
Is no. They can.
No. They can't do it.
They can't. Not even close.
Well, there's mutations, right, Fred? Mutations are the hope and salvation, the God of the evolutionist. So they think that if you have a lot of accidents over a long period of time, you get enormous complexity and sophistication.
Yeah, and
of course.
They rely on these, again, you use the key word accidents. They have to be random. They
mutations.
have to be an error, basically, an
Errors.
Accident.
If you have enough mistakes over a long enough period of time, you come up with brilliant, sophisticated, intricate, complex systems.
That's right. If you borrow money that you can't pay back, you'll make millions of dollars,
yeah,
like everybody's making today, right?
Right. There are basic rules of logic and reason and information, and evolution violates these things.
Oh, absolutely.
Anyway, mutation theory of language evolution, it maintains that modern language exploded onto the planet with a big bang. Fred, it was a big genetic bang with this fortuitous mutation. Something went wrong in the brain, and it blessed Cro-Magnon with the gift of tongues.
You know, but then Jerry brings up another very interesting problem that I wasn't aware of. I don't know if you were, Bob, but apparently different parts of the brain are involved in language. So it's not that the language is isolated to one part of the brain. It's scattered throughout the whole brain, the capability of our language and speech.
Right, exactly. So even if there was a mutation in the brain, you know, by magic, like you take your computer and you bring a magnet over the hard drive and you mess it up, the data, because you want it to get better. You want it to evolve, right? Bill Gates wouldn't have made his billions if he just did random mutations to his code.
That's right.
You're a software engineer? You are?
Yes.
It doesn't work that way.
It doesn't quite work that way. It's amazing. You know, to believe in evolution requires far, far greater faith, and requires a faith
a blind faith.
Similar to believing in Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, magic.
Yeah.
And so, but it turns out that a mutation wouldn't work. Linguists and biologists now believe it would take thousands of changes to the brain in order to develop the ability for language. Thousands. So forget your one blessed mutation, and now my baby can speak.
Yeah, again, it brings up irreducible complexity. How can this all happen slowly over time? How can one small beneficial so-called change in the brain lead to another? All these are scattered all over the brain. I mean, it's just another testimony that this cannot be explained naturalistically. It can only be explained by a creator.
Right. And if chimps were around, let's say Australopithecus, Lucy, few million years ago, and you need thousands, millions of changes in the DNA to get from a chimp that's 3 feet tall to a human being, then those changes, they have to happen at the incredibly slow pace of reproduction. Animal reproduction is slow. It takes years. I mean, in a test tube, you could maybe with bacteria, you could have 100 generations in a week. But the slow, just absurdly slow rate of reproduction for primates and for human beings, and they're going to have millions of genetic changes all occur randomly and all fall into the line of Homo sapiens and not compete with one another, and it's just absurd.
And remember, Bob, it has to happen at least 100 different isolated geographic areas. Separate from each other.
Because of original 100 unrelated languages.
Bergman notes that many attempts have been made to determine an evolutionary origin of language, but all have failed. And he quotes a scientist, an evolutionist, Simpson, who said that people with least complex cultures have sophisticated languages with complex grammar and large vocabularies, can name and discuss anything that occurs in the sphere occupied by their speaker. The oldest language that can reasonably be reconstructed is already modern, sophisticated, and complex from an evolutionary point of view.
Wow.
It's so, just like the trilobite we mentioned earlier. It's already complex, and
it's
yet
already
it's,
sophisticated.
They find it at the so-called beginning.
Yeah, and supposedly trilobites are, you know, they were millions of years ago.
That's right.
In such sophistication. Well, this Bodmer, evolutionist, 1944, he wrote about the origin of human language. Bodmer says that taxonomists like to break up groups, fishes, mammals, insects, and so on. But he said beyond that point, we can only speculate with little plausibility about their evolutionary past. So it is with languages. So he's saying, look, we don't know how all these different groups evolved. We don't know how flowers evolve. We don't know how this, and we don't know how languages evolved either. So Jerry Bergman ends his article, concludes it, talking about the origin of human language has been a topic for many centuries and will no doubt continue to be debated. But he quotes another evolutionist from 2002 and says, we are no closer to uncovering the origin of languages today than ever before.
Are they any closer in proving evolution theory in general? It's the same problem.
No. It goes backwards. It gets worse the more we learn.
That's right.
When the scientists, they're climbing this mountain, and they take centuries, and they finally get up there, and the theologians are sitting on the summit. And what took it so long?
It was actually an evolutionist who came up with that illustration.
Yeah,
that
that's right. And this is a theme that we know where languages came from because God tells us in his word that God instituted language and then diversified the human tongue. Fred Williams, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thanks, Bob. It was great being here.
It was really good to have you on the show. Again, the Bob in Your Live annual broadcast telethon. Please give if you possibly can. Please call us 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. And any gift, $30, would help so much. If you give $50 or $100, you can get 2 Bible study albums or 4 of any kind of BEL resources. And Maranatha, what a great school in Arvada, Colorado. Our website is kgov.com. Stop the tape. Stop the tape. All right. If you'd like to listen to the rest of that, it's almost over. Just go to our website, kgov, K KGOV.com. Right now, Doug McBurney's in studio. Hi, Doug.
Hey, Bob. I'm here with an update on the telethon.
The $20,000 goal, February yes. broadcast telethon.
And we're blowing the doors out. We're at $12,085 right now.
$12,000.
$12,000. For your public school teachers, that's 12,085.
Okay.
$12,085 so far in our goal of $20,000 to keep Bob Enyart live on the air for another year. We must have your investment now if you're out there and you haven't given yet.
So we're over 60%, Doug.
That's because we're successful here. If you want to be associated with success, call us right now.
That's right. The phone number is 800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. And we've said if you give $50, any two Bible study albums we have at Bubba Enyart Live, we'll give you as a gift, a thank you, and that's a $20 savings. And for $100, any four resources, including the plot,
wow,
My Life's Work, an overview of the whole Bible, which normally is $50. So you could save $50 with a $100 gift with a thank you back.
That's a great deal.
Any four titles.
And for a gift of $1,000 or more.
$1,000?
Yes.
Wow.
$1,000 or more. I'll have a personal conversation with you and let you know about the goals we've set here at the ministry. We've got goals that we're going to achieve this year related to the issue of creation evolution, mm-hmm, the issue of educating Christians and equipping Christians to better be prepared to give a reason for the faith that lies within them and to defend God, mm-hmm, and His Word against attack. And if you're on board with the personhood of the unborn, we'll have a conversation with you about that. So give us a call, 1-800-836-9278. For $1,000, we'll have a personal conversation.
All right, Doug, that's pretty good.
And it's well worth it, too.
That's better than getting somebody's voice on your home answering machine.
Oh, absolutely. Better than one of those robocalls, you know, from one of the
political parties. So 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. Also, if you sign up for one of our monthly Bible study albums, our topical videos, the sermons, these are CDs or DVDs you get once a month, then your second month will be free.
Wow.
And we multiply the monthly amount times 10 to apply it to our telethon goal.
And the monthly support is hugely important to meeting our setting a budget.
It really
being
is.
Able to operate for another year. Oh, and by the way, Oklahoma finally got on the big board.
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma's finally up there with a $500 contribution we had.
Wow.
So, way to go, Oklahoma.
I wonder what state now, like back east, Massachusetts or Maryland?
We've got Massachusetts.
We do. How about Maryland?
I don't know about Maryland, but I know that Hawaii is still lagging behind.
Hawaii and Maryland.
Hawaii and Maryland, wake up.
All right.
And get involved with the telethon.
And think of the scope, the breadth of support geographically on the globe if somebody from Maryland gives and somebody from Hawaii gives.
Yeah, we have pledges from Germany and Taiwan.
Wow.
So we need Oklahoma. We got Oklahoma. But we need Hawaii and Maryland to get involved.
That'll help a lot.
We absolutely need you. That's 1-800-836-9278. We must have your support. Call us right now.
To keep Bob and Yart Live broadcasting for another year, this is our annual February broadcast telethon. I hope you've enjoyed this Real Science Friday program.
Awesome stuff.
On the origin of language, and you could hear the end of it. Just go online to KGOV, KGOV.com, and you could read the summary of the show. It's just two paragraphs. It packs all this great information into two short paragraphs, and you could email that to somebody.
Yeah.
You could say, hey, do you ever think about the evolutionary problem of language evolving by accident?
That's just mind-blowing stuff today. Mind-blowing stuff on language.
Yeah, and so you email that to somebody, then they could listen to the two programs.
Yeah.
So thank you, Doug McBurney.
Well, thanks for having me in, Bob. Again, 1-800-836-9278.
And Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada, what a great school. And our website is KGOV, KGOV.com. And this is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.